Welcome to the Regen Brands Podcast. This is a place for consumers, operators, and investors to learn about the consumer brands supporting regenerative agriculture and how they're changing the world. This is your host, Kyle, joined with my co-host, Dave C. Let's dive in.
On this episode, we have Francisco Pergola, who is the co-founder and CEO at Chetty's. Chetty's is supporting regenerative agriculture with its cheese crackers made with regenerative cheddar cheese. In this episode, we learn about Chetty's origin story, why they decided to start sourcing regenerative cheese, and their big plans for the future. Francisco and his brother Tomas have scrapped and clawed their way to their current state, and we're excited to have Francisco give you a behind-the-scenes look of that journey on this episode. Let's dive in. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Regen Brands Podcast. We are fired up today to have Francisco from Chetty's here with us. So welcome, Francisco.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on here. Super excited.
We're stoked to have you here. For those listening, you know, the first 4 minutes of laughter probably have been edited out, but we are in a fantastic mood as a collective here. And I think this is going to be a super fun episode just because of the general vibe.
I say keep it in. I'm a proponent for keeping the laughter in there, you know.
I totally agree. Whether or not it's going to get there, we'll see. TBD. Yeah. Anthony's in charge of these things. All right. And our editor, Brad. So shout out to Brad. But Francisco, you know, for those who are not super familiar with the brand Chetty's, give us like a quick lay of the land. Like, what does Chetty's produce? How many SKUs are there? Where can people buy you or find you today? Give us the lowdown.
Yeah, so in a gist, Chetty's are Cheez-Its on steroids, but that's what we always say jokingly. Cheez-Its healthier brother helps people paint a really clear picture in their mind, right? So we actually have a third amount of the ingredients as Cheez-Its, six times the amount of cheese, twice the amount of protein, less carbs, just less junk in there. And I think the most important part is they just taste better. I mean, that's what people come for us for. It's just the taste.
Yeah, so it's almost like the opposite, really. Like Cheez-Its are kind of on steroids and, you know, all sorts of stuff in there that they don't need. And really, like Chetty's is like the super lean, ripped, like,
I like
healthy that version of the cheese.
We are.
Yes.
We're natural. We are natural. But we're delicious. That's our biggest thing. That's really our biggest claim to fame is just we're freaking delicious. And it's crunchy. It's the perfect snack.
They are delicious. And I think the funniest part about the whole cheesy comparison is they have all the ads where they're like, we're the cheesiest. We have so much cheese, like blah, blah, blah. And like their first ingredient is not even cheese. Unlike Chetty's, whose first ingredient is what? Cheddar cheese.
And it's regenerative, organic. And we have full transparency of where that ingredient's come from, which I think is super neat. I mean, no one else in the market can say that except for us.
Yeah. That's huge. We're definitely going to dive into that. We're definitely going to spend some time there.
Yeah.
Take us back, man. Let's get it kicked off. I mean, how the hell did you decide we're going to make a regenerative cheese? We're going to make a better cheese. Take us back.
Oof. Where do we even start? Well, it's a disclaimer. I'll start by saying it's not the super sexiest story. It has evolved tremendously from day one. It's really bizarre, but I was actually finishing my master's degree in architecture. So not cheese crackers at all.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, nothing related to baking, nothing related to food or business. Just grinding through studio hours. And my thesis was actually looking at redesigning hospital waiting rooms. Both my parents are doctors.
Oh, wow.
Grew up just hearing just horror stories, right? Just this sucks. That sucks.
They all suck. Yeah.
They all suck. Fun. I mean, no one wants to be in a hospital at the end of the day.
You're
doing something wrong if you're there. I spent 6 months in clinics, waiting rooms, just doing research. And I became enamored with the food culture there, oddly enough. It was a huge community that shared food, had dietary restrictions. I mean, that was like the main talking point at every single clinic I ever visited. And, you know, the reoccurring pattern was that, you know, these patients were needing protein. And the only thing available at the time, this is 2016, was protein bars and protein shakes. The only protein savory snack on the market at the time was Quest chips. And I believe Simply Protein. So more geared towards like the, you know, workout community, pretty niche market. And, you know, that following summer, we had some time, Tomas and I, and we said, let's just do a really crazy experiment and see if we were to make like a cheese cracker, cheese flavored snack packed with protein that the dietitians would approve of, what angle do we have into getting into their dietary program? That was the original business idea, was, you know, becoming this dietitian approved healthy snack. And it worked. Like it started to take off. Like we were selling door to door. We were making a couple thousand a month, like enough to get us, you know, motivated. We're still in college. Really, this is awesome.
I got to pause. I'm so like, this is so crazy to me. And was the target market you were shooting for like hospitals? Like, were you selling to hospitals and clinics?
Yeah, it was hospitals. And really our main client was the dietitians, because they were the ones that approved of all the snacks that were coming in and out of their program. And those snacks would then be given to their patients for free. So we had to win over the dietitians' hearts, which, you know, we were in there, we were serving them. Nobody else was doing that. So it was an untapped market that was up for grabs. And the patients and the dietitians loved getting attention. So unfortunately, that got shut down. Like 8 months down the line, there's so much red tape in medical. It's owned by like the big conglomerates. And so when they got caught wind of this happening, they're just like, nope, can't have vendors coming in and selling directly to our clinics. So we had gained enough of a following there. We were servicing about 60 clinics in San Antonio, each that were ordering on a weekly basis from us.
Wow.
Yeah. And, they were requesting that we still send them Chetties, and we're figuring out how we could do it. So we said, oh, let's just get into HEB, which is the largest, retailer here in the South. It'll be easy, right? Like, we have a clientele, we have a product. we went to the buyer. We actually knocked on her door on the campus. She was like, I love it. Who are you? Like, we're like, we sell cheese crackers and we want to be in your stores. And she was like, okay, so does like 10,000 other, you know, people. So, like after months of like insisting that we were the next greatest thing, she finally reviewed the product. And I kid you not, she answered us by saying it was the worst brand she's had come through her desk in a long time.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She said the product sucked ass. And there's so much work to be done. Yes. So much work to make. Can you even fulfill a pallet? You know, X, Y, Z. And we were just like, nope. And so she said, you know, when you have anything that's even remotely worth presenting, just come back. And so we did. Like, she gave us a checklist of things that she's looking for. And in a year's time, we came back with a potential manufacturing partner, you know, how we would scale. We reamped the brand. And she came back and she still said no, but she liked the progress. So that was kind of heartbreaking. But we shortly after that got into an accelerator program called the DFA, the Dairy Farmers of America. And because, you know, our most prized possession about our snack is the cheese, it made sense, that accelerator program. And that summer we pitched to the Kansas City community, you know, investors and business community, and a couple local newspapers picked it up, and the Hy-Vee buyer, Hy-Vee is like a large retailer in the Midwest, saw it and they picked us up. They were our first client. That was, I'm overly simplifying that story, because that's a really crazy one, man.
You're underselling the hell out of that story, one. So it's a very good story, even though you said it wasn't. Shout out to Hy-Vee, because people think, you know, the Midwest is sleepy and not innovative, and you're talking about them taking a risk on you. We had Tucker from Chi saying they're carrying, you know, their plant-based pork. But dude, a couple major lessons that just came out of what you just shared, right? One, you can't be scared to fail. Like, you got to fail your way to success. Like, you guys didn't know what you were doing, but you went in there and you found out exactly what you needed to do.
Yeah.
The other one was, I forgot it. What was it?
So the main thing was just that, like, the Hy-Vee buyer, I have to tell the story because it's actually quite funny. We were also just banging on his door, right? Keep in mind, at the time when we were presenting to all these retailers, we had no solutions. Like, we couldn't actually make the cracker. Mm. We didn't have a scale. We didn't have the funding for it. Like, nothing. Like, we were selling a promise, really. Mm-hmm. We were selling the brand. And we had gone in touch with the Hy-Vee buyer through RangeMe. No response. We sent them samples. And what triggered him was that actually when he saw the newspaper ad, that just was a coincidence, but he put him out in the lobby, for just the employees to try. And apparently his boss, the category manager for all grocery, took him home and put him in his pantry. And according to the story, his wife, fell in love with Cheddies. And went to Hy-Vee to buy Cheddies. And when she found out that they weren't being carried in Hy-Vee, she like got really pissed at her husband, allegedly. and then the grocery buyer was like, you know, Brett, why do we not have these in our store? What the hell's going on? And so literally he said, like, that happened yesterday and I'm calling you today. And like, that's let's awesome. Get you set up. So shout out to the Hy-Vee category manager's wife. Thank you. Wherever you are, if you ever listen to this story, I'd love to meet. I will send you merch. Like, you know, we owe it all to you. Thank you. That was like our first break. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, talk about the power of the right audience, right? You get the right individual to become a fan. And I mean, some people just have more power. You know, like, decision maker, significant other. Boom. Done. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So what are the odds? I mean, and the other lesson, Anthony, you alluded to a couple different lessons, the tenacity and the just knocking on doors, you know, relentlessly. That's like the moral. I mean, mm-hmm. You started doing it with the healthcare industry. You just walked onto the HEB campus, which is sprawling, by the way. I don't know how you even found the right door to knock on. That place is huge.
Well, the security guard was like, you guys have a meeting here? We're like, yeah. Hey, you remember the door? I don't know. I can't. It's with Christina. He's like, oh, Christina? Yeah. Oh yeah, sorry. I guess maybe blurp out the name, but we have a meeting at noon. He's like, "All right," like buzzes us in, gives us the visitor thing, the whole thing. Like, we give him the IDs. Like, we're in, and like we're like they worked. You know, I mean, it was pretty nuts, but like it got us in front of her. Mm-hmm. So
right, I guess lesson three is fake it till you make it. Right.
Oh, fake it till you make it. I mean,
yeah. The thing I couldn't remember was how bad hospital and healthcare food is. And the lesson is that we need to radically transform that segment of the food system. And people don't realize how much food gets consumed at those facilities. And also people don't realize that, just like Francisco alluded to, they have massive contracts with the big food service distributors and the major big food companies. And you really can't, a lot of the times, get in there as an emerging brand or a local brand. There's definitely exceptions to that, but healthcare food overall is a joke and does not inspire health. And so, I mean, I love that the origin of the brand comes back to that, because it's a major thing that we need to fix overall.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And that's a whole topic in and of itself. And I didn't mention that while I was in the clinics, like, the craziest thing I thought was that, you know, it'd be the dietitians would come out to the waiting rooms and they'd tell the patient, you know, don't eat this and don't eat that and stay away from bananas or whatever. And, and they, I don't know, because of the potassium and it's another world. And, you know, they go back inside to, you know, out of the waiting room, and then the patient would just be like, they would turn around and they'd go to the vending machine that was in the waiting room and just like beep, boop, beep, and just like out comes Cheetos, you know, and it's just like, so the epiphany there was like, okay, if we're going to make a snack, like, it can't be white packaging. It's got to be approachable. It has to be fun. Like, it's got to be flavor focused. Because really at the time, like 2016, I don't know if you can recall, but like everything that was healthy was pretty sterile. Like, it was clean, very like clean font, like white, and just like health claims all over it, you know, and this and that. And we said, like, what people actually care about is like triggering words, like crunchy, tasty, cheesy, like familiar things that makes them feel like they're not going from Cheetos to an apple. Like, there's got to be a middle ground player. And that's where we want to live. So that still holds true today.
I love that, man. How, so you haven't always been regenerative. You haven't always had regenerative dairy. How do you go from breaking into Hy-Vee and HEB to then becoming kind of regenerative and where you are today?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I'll just continue on the story. That way there's like some understanding of how we got there. So we're rolling at that point where we're in HEB, we're in Hy-Vee. We're really starting to kick ass and, pick up Presence Marketing. They're one of the larger, food brokers in the country. And so we start gaining all this distribution, and things are going great. And then like everyone else in this world, boom, pandemic, 2020 comes around and it just starts to just, all these things start to happen. Like, the first thing was supply chain. People start freaking out. So they start over ordering ingredients. No one knows how long things are going to last. You know, labor shortages, logistics, things getting stuck at port. It just like royally screwed us over in so many ways. We were constantly pivoting to stay alive. But one of the most challenging things was actually the cheese. So like the cheese market is really interesting. Like some years they'll overproduce or underproduce, and some of the dairy will be made into like powders. It all has to do with just like market price and supply. So,
This is like general, like commodity cheese, right? Not talking about single
commodity dairy, just
the general, commodity dairy, great call.
Yeah. So at the time, like really, we were really focused on highlighting the fact that we are industry leaders for using like fresh cheese in our product, not just powder. Like everyone says, that they use only cheese and, like that's what they use in their product, but they're using powder cheeses. Like, we're the only ones using fresh cheese. Like, we grind it on site and just put a bunch of it into the mixer. And no one else is doing that. So, so that made a lot of sense for us. And so we were just purchasing, it's still really good, high quality cheddar cheese, but it was only non-GMO. It wasn't anything else. And then, pandemic comes around and, Kraft and all the, like the massive players, General Mills, all the big players start coming out and they just buy all the cheese. So, cheese is interesting because, unlike, you know, wheat or grain, or, you know, if you have a supply of that and you can mill it, you know, it's pretty readily available, but with cheese, there's like an aging process involved. So, you can't just make cheese and then use it the next day. You have to like age it for months on end. And we use sharp cheddar. So that's like normally 8 months. And so all the sharp cheddar inventory in the country was pretty much depleted. And we were like taking anything that we could, like we were buying a little bit over here, a little bit over there. And so like a learning from that was like, we need to have control of our own supply chain, as crazy as that sounds. And we literally asked ourselves like, we're already crazy. How crazy would it be to make cheddar cheese? Like, is that something that we can get into? Like how unrealistic is it? And that's where, really, I mean,
and just so I understand, like the impetus there, is that because you don't want to have to wait on other people aging cheese and buying like that finished cheese, so you can buy dairy instead and just make your own cheddar, so you have control of that aging process.
Exactly, and it's not even so much about having control of the aging process; it's just really having control of like one stable ingredient that you know is yours and you know where it's coming from. And whereas before, basically, you buy cheese typically from brokers, because unless you're buying, you know, I don't know, 40 truckloads of cheese, that might be a gross over exaggeration, but at least a truckload, at a time or two. You're really at the mercy of what the broker has in stock, and it can be coming from really anywhere. I mean, right, California, yeah, Wisconsin, what have you. And cheese, it's crazy, you know, because I've seen like so many different types of cheddar cheeses that on paper, we have eaten so much cheddar cheese. It's like, and like when we ask our suppliers to send us cheese, they don't send us like a little like, you know, cheese strip. They send us 40 pounds. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a freaking,
yeah,
we invite everyone. But, so we said, I'm a huge like green thumb. I love ag. I was actually looking at going into ag prior to architecture, and it's like a hobby of mine. And so like I know what's going on for the most part in the industry. And so I said, you know, I wonder if there's anyone doing regenerative cheese. That might be something that if we're already going to be going down this path, we may as well just be using the best dairy you can get your hands on. That was, that was the mentality, was let's get the best. Let's source the best. Let's see if it's, if it permits. And, that's where this whole journey started, was who's selling regenerative dairy, which at the time, Alexander Family Farm was the first certified in the country. And so that, to answer your question, that's where we got into the regenerative space, was pivoting in order to provide a higher quality ingredient to our consumers and also, making our business more sustainable for the long run.
Yeah.
So you started working with Alexander and buying their milk and making your own cheese?
Right. So we don't own a cheese manufacturing plant, but we found a partner, and, I went out there. I stayed with the family for like 4 days, and because I had to pitch them this idea, like, you know, let us buy 8 truckloads, which was the minimum that the cheese manufacturer needed in order to make a cheese run. And so I was like, let us buy 8 truckloads from you guys, and on top of it, we want to pay you all a premium for your milk, because that isn't happening as of right now. The only premium for dairy is organic. So it's, you know, it's either regular or organic. No one's being paid extra for regenerative. So we said, like, we want to pay you guys more for regenerative milk, because we believe that you deserve to be paid more. Like, you're, this is a labor of love, what you guys do here. It really is. So, you know, and so that began the relationship. And I mean, they're just the greatest family. Really?
Yeah. But I've also stayed at Blake and Stephanie's. And one thing I'll say while you're there, you eat like a king.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Like,
Stephanie's, I gained like 7 pounds. I think
the ingredients are amazing. Yeah. It is a wonderful place to spend time.
But, and it's just like fresh cut, thick bread, and then like 8 pounds of butter on it that was just turned that morning. You're just like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, when are you gonna do this again? It's a real deal.
Is literally, like, their house is on this little street, and directly across the street, literally like stone's throw, is like the cows. That's where they milk the cows. It's insane. That's absolutely insane.
Yeah, you wake up and they're there grazing on the fence line. Like, it's a beautiful sight, really.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
Yep.
So tell us about that process. Like, okay, you got your own milk now. You got the cheese partner. Like, how many test batches did you have to run? Or was it like, boom, like, nailed it first try, this is the perfect cheddar, ready to go? Or was that like a process?
No, so luckily, I mean, the cheese...
8 truckloads, dude. Like, that's a commitment. Like, that's
was a commitment.
You weren't messing around either.
Yeah, rolling dice.
It was a commitment. And the most difficult part about all of this was that we didn't pay for the milk up front or the cheese. We were going to pay for the cheese 6 months down the road. So, like, that's the tricky part, right?
So it's not, like, let me buy 8 truckloads of cheese. It's give me 8 truckloads of cheese, and I promise I'll sell it.
Please.
And then I'll pay you back.
Huge. It was a huge promise, right? Like, and we owe it all to them for believing in us. But really, like, that was the promise, was like, we're gonna put regenerative in the spotlight for like center store and cheese snacks, and like, that's going to be at the core of our mission, really, as a company. So, and, you know, luckily we we have great partners. So we made it happen, but it was wonky. I mean, looking back at it, it's super cool opportunity that they gave us.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you've got the new cheese, you got that process dialed in. You start making crackers with regenerative cheese. I believe there was a rebrand that took place at the same time. And did you have to like start back from zero from a distribution standpoint? Did you pick HEB and IV back up? Like, tell us about that process.
That was a pain. Luckily, like, cause we were set up in unifying KEHE, and the product dimensions is really like the biggest thing. If it deviates too much from your previous packaging, you got to restart from zero. We started from like about 50%. So, which I mean, at the end of the day is like starting from zero, but yeah, we went through a whole rebrand. We're still working on like how to convey regenerative to the consumer since it's so new. Like it's, I mean, even friends and family, I'm still explaining it today and the benefits of it. So I think, you know, and I'm really curious to see how this shapes, from the consumer standpoint.
Well, I mean, let's pause there because this is so important. And it's something that we talk about with all of the brands who are on the podcast is like, how are you conveying, you know, the benefits of supporting regenerative agriculture from either an environmental perspective or a nutritional density perspective? So tell us, like, how do you see that communication going with, I mean, either friends and family or from like a brand perspective on pack? Walk us through that.
Yeah. My mind is immediately going in all different directions since I still don't have it, you know, nailed down. But you know, the thing that I've just like over the years continue to see is that like food to a consumer, you know, is predominantly at the end of the day about flavor and the appeal of wanting to eat it at its core. You know, like it might cure cancer, but if it looks like you're about to ingest a piece of coal, like you can pretty much, you know, waive your chances of them trying it goodbye. Like it has to appeal visually and it needs to sound delicious. Like that's what I've seen draws the consumer to get excited about trying it. And so like from a regenerative standpoint, like, and we're, you know, we're trying to navigate this through today is, like what is the most important thing about regenerative that can speak to the quality of the ingredient and the taste, better taste. And so it's kind of working, like you can either work back to forward or forward to back, forward being, you know, taste and quality and talking about that. And then, oh, it just so happens to be like the best agricultural solution today. And this is why, you know, you can choose like how much or how little you talk about it. Or you can start with like, this is the regenerative agriculture. It produces the highest quality ingredient and it's like great for the environment and the farmers are being paid more and it's just like a better system. And it just so happens to be like absolutely tasty and delicious. Like that's how I see it. There's either two ways of conveying that message to the consumer.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, we're kind of placing bets on people being more interested in like taste and then, you know, talking about regenerative. And as there's more education around regenerative, you can move that messaging up on your scale to be closer to taste and quality. That's how I see it.
Yeah. It's going to be a lagging value prop for the foreseeable future. Right. Yeah. And tying it to those other more important leading value props is going to be super important. And whoever does that the best is going to win. It seems like the people that have invested in a certification like you have are kind of relying on that moniker front of pack and then trying to have a blurb or something that's a little bit deeper on the back of pack if you have the space to do that. You know, we all know kind of the CPG game, what drives trial, what drives repurchase. But I think there's a really cool lever, especially with a product like yours, to invest heavily in sampling. Right. Because you can, with a little education, I think you can educate those samplers. People buy on emotion and then back it up with logic, right? So they're going to buy on the emotion of it's crispy, it's tasty, it's cheesy. And then if they're informed about the region ag on the backside, they're going to tell people they bought it for that reason when we know they really did it. But that's great if we can turn them into, you know, evangelists on the back end.
Exactly. Or, you know, it gains enough of a following to where like, you know, everyone's like, oh yeah, Chetty's are the best or whatever brand is the best. They're like the most delicious thing I've ever tasted. And there's this thing called regenerative. I don't really know what that is, to be honest. I'm attributing this product being so fantastic because it's regenerative. And so like, at least that's how maybe I see regenerative taking off, is like products need to be absolutely delicious and higher in quality. Like,
I think it's a really good point. Yeah. And I think it's fun to hear you talk about the story, because I think you're almost using like the big food playbook, like from a branding and advertising perspective for regenerative, which I think is really cool. And I was just listening to a different podcast that Anthony actually posted about recently on Tasting Terroir, I think is how it's pronounced. And it was talking about, I can't remember the individual's name, but he's researching the nutritional density difference between grain finished, grass finished, and then like multi-species grass finished beef. And he's trying to focus on nutritional density and say, can we quantify the nutritional differences between these three different finishing types of beef? And the answer was yes. And one of the most interesting parts about what he was studying was, it turns out there were these French and Italian scientists in Europe studying cheese to try to figure out what makes cheese taste better. And they ended up studying the same compounds because nutritional density and flavor are directly linked. And it's like a really exciting time for food where, like, spot on to your point. It's like, okay, yeah, let's focus on flavor. But real flavor comes from nutritional density rather than these added chemicals, flavors, and stuff like that you throw on top of a cracker, right? So I think it's really cool like where you're heading. Wow. And the science is going there too, which is rad.
That's actually really cool. Wow.
Yeah.
The guy doing that research is Dr. Stephen Van Fleet. We'll put some links in the show notes to that research. It's super cool.
That sounds great.
Not to be confused with Greta Van Fleet, who is heavily referenced in the English Guest podcast. Like a rock band. I mean, this is a scientist.
Note taken. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
But also, like, from either a packaging or a product color standpoint, you know, coming from the fresh produce world where most of the product that we sold people was just merchandised as itself. It's not in packaging, right? Like, we used to say people eat with their eyes. And so center store, you're going to be in packaging. But then also anything else, the color of the actual item, like, I'm not going to name other names, but I go to Publix down here in Florida and I get white oak, you know, white oak grass-fed beef. And I've gotten some of the other grass-fed, grass-finished beefs, but which one looks the best on the shelf every time and tastes the best? The regenerative one, right? Yeah. And it's not a coincidence.
Yep.
I was going to say, you know, for those who couldn't see, as Anthony was talking about this, Francisco's pointing behind his head at the Chetty's box, because front and center on the Chetty's box is not like, the cracker's there, don't get me wrong, but it's a massive slab of cheddar cheese. It is doing exactly what Anthony just said. Like, people eat with they shop with their eyes, you know. So you see this huge hunk of cheddar cheese, and you're like, wow, okay, that looks delicious. Like, what is this that I'm looking at? And then you get to interact a little bit more with the packaging.
Yep. Yeah. It's an ever going evolution. I mean, who knows? Maybe the cheese is the center stage. Maybe it's the cracker, but I was actually pointing more to myself because I eat with my eyes. So if you put 3 pounds of meat on my plate, I have to finish it. Like, I have to see the bottom of the plate, you know? But yeah, so I agree.
Francisco, what was the biggest challenge between just being a cheese buyer and then being a partnered cheese manufacturer? I mean, what was the biggest challenge there?
I would say, the biggest thing really, it's again, just being at the mercy of whatever else somebody has available for you and not really understanding what's best for your business. I mean, at the end of the day, they're just trying to make a sale. Mm-hmm. And for us now having to like procure our own supply, it's about really understanding, you know, what Blake and Stephanie are going through. You know, is there a drought? Mm-hmm. Is it too much rain? Like, what does our cheese manufacturer's availability look like? And so there's a lot more coordinating now going on just to even make the cheese. Once you make the cheese, it's, you know, you have it, it's there, it's yours, it's aging. And like, you can tell that story to the consumer, which is something that's really not told in center store very often.
Totally agree.
You know,
so walk us through for the lay cracker consumer who is interested in Chetty's, walk us through the difference between a conventional competitor, call it Cheez-It, whoever, how they source cheese, make their crackers, and yours. And then, you know, what are the price differences there? Is it, you know, a 10% premium, 20% premium? Walk us through that whole story.
Well, I would say, firstly, the biggest difference, and I would encourage anyone to do this, is buy a box of Cheddies. You can buy them online, Amazon, Sprouts nationwide, H-E-B, Hy-Vee, and like a lot of mom and pops growing that distribution. Buy a box of Cheddies, get yourself a box of the classic sea salt, and then go and buy a box of Cheez-Its. Like, I encourage anyone to do this, because the minute you try our product, it's interesting that you bring this up, Kyle, talking about how nutrient density is somewhat correlated to taste, and then try our product and then try a Cheez-It. And you will just immediately know, without even having to look at any of the attributes or anything, that like, we don't have to call out on the front of our packaging. Like, we don't have to scream like real cheese and this and that. Like, we do obviously talk about our cheese, but the Cheez-Its talks about it in like a humorous way. You know, they have like the scientists, and they have to find like quirky ways to convince the consumer that their product is made with cheese. And like, for us, like, you just try it. Like, it's it's clearly like, we put a lot of fresh cheddar cheese in our product, and it tastes like it. It tastes natural. It tastes clean. A Cheez-It, like, if you eat a Cheddies and then you eat a Cheez-It's going to taste like nothing. Like, once your palate recognizes what cheddar cheese tastes like in a cheese cracker, a Cheez-It will taste like cardboard. Like, guarantee, if anyone listening to this, like, you know, determines otherwise, like, feel free to reach out. Would love to hear your thoughts. But, like, that's the biggest difference. And then actually getting down to the nitty gritty of, like, how that's, you know, how that comes to be. Cheez-Its are predominantly flour. I don't know what, like legally or legally cannot disclose, but generally we believe it's somewhere in the ballpark of like 85% to 90% flour, closer to 80%. Wow. And then they use, you know, hydrogenated oils, mostly because there's no fat really coming from cheese. They have, you know, artificial flavors and preservatives and coloring. Like, they use fake colors to add, to make it look like really cheesy. That's another thing that, like, we're still exploring, you know, because cheddar cheese in the rest of the world is white. And in the US, it's yellow. Like, we're the only country in the whole world that uses coloring in our cheddar cheese. So, like, there's no white cheddar and regular cheddar. It's just cheddar. One of them just has color. So, like,
wow.
Mind blown.
That's the white cheddar
popcorn we always bought from Trader Joe's back in the day. Just regular cheddar.
So I mean, and I have to go back and look at when this actually happened, but, like, I think it was, like, when they were trying to figure out how to sell more dairy in this country. And I don't know when this is, like, maybe this might be 20s, 30s or something, might be prior to that, but had potentially something to do with the war. Again, don't quote me on this, but they were trying to find ways to make cheese more appealing to consumers. And some scientists or psychologists or something determined that yellow or red is more appealing to a consumer. It looks tastier to the consumer. And so that was a way to spike sales for dairy. And so, like, that's why McDonald's and all the fast food chains are red or yellow or orange. And so, yeah, they started adding food coloring to cheddar cheese. And so, like, a big conversation we have at Cheddies is, like, if we're all about being natural, right? Like, we don't use any artificial anything. Like, do we portray the orange wedge that's classically known as cheddar cheese to the consumer? Or do we need to convey a little bit more transparency about what cheddar cheese actually is? That's again, like, borderline with how we speak about our gender. It's on the same level, in my opinion, because consumers don't know. They just don't know. So that, do you fight that battle? I don't know.
That's super interesting. That's
fascinating. Yeah. I'm like, there's some podcast or something I listened to a while back, and it was talking about, maybe it's a book I read, I don't know, talking about how humans and apes, the species of apes, evolved the ability to see more color. And it was all about determining the ripeness of fruit. And because the riper the fruit is, the more nutritionally dense it is, and the more bioavailable those nutrients are for consumption.
Yeah, so when you mentioned, like,
coloring the cheese, maybe there's some correlation there where they assume like it's quote riper in some capacity. So it's like well, it feels like it's actually better to eat than a pale fruit.
That's really interesting because even with cheddar cheese, right? Like even with cheddar cheese, like you can tell the quality of the cheddar. Say like you weren't using a coloring, right? You could tell really what the animals were eating because it's not like white. It's not bleached white. It's not
right.
It has like a hue of yellow because you know the animals are grazing and mm-hmm. that green will actually basically stain the milk to some degree. Like it colors not green, but I don't know. There's an interaction there that happens. And so like it will tint the milk and that in turn like makes the cheddar look kind of yellowish. So I think maybe what they wanted to do is exaggerate that and make it really yellow to portray mm-hmm. maybe psychologically. Maybe I'm just, totally wrong here, but that's maybe where I came from.
I mean, we're way off the end of like clearly talking about things that we don't know too much about. We're right in that deep end right now.
Yeah, we're in.
And that's okay. It's good to, hypothesize and like, riff on these kinds of things. But just disclaimer for the listeners, we don't actually know what we're talking about in this capacity. No.
I'm sure Google would answer all of these things in about 5 minutes. But
I mean, ChatGPT would be on it.
ChatGPT. When did cheese start becoming yellow and why do consumers like it?
Yeah, we got to do that next time.
As someone that's had both, I can validate Cheddies are in a different universe than Cheez-Its. And Francisco's not paying me to say that. that's one. Two is, if a company's that insecure and needs to prove to you that much that like there's real cheese and all this stuff, like where there's smoke, there's fire. Like there's probably something that they're hiding. There's probably something that they're lying about. There's probably some half truths there. But it goes back to that. What we've been riffing on here is kind of like what from that playbook is like cool to use and like it's going to help us with regen and like what do we need to steer clear of? And that what you just mentioned, Francisco, about do we show the orange cheddar versus like real cheddar? Every entrepreneur we've had on this podcast is talking about things like that, just different trade-offs and questions we're asking ourselves of building something that's so radically different from what we have, but also being able to fit into the current food system enough to get the traction and the success and all the things that are needed. And I think that's towing that line is like how we're going to figure this thing out. And it's not going to be black and white. It's probably going to be very gray and just nuanced and going to take a lot of conversations like this.
Totally. And I will say even just like on the manufacturer side of things, now that I'm seeing, how difficult it is to scale a business, I can see, why the bigger players have taken the shortcuts they've taken, because it is really difficult to provide the same product day in and day out to a consumer, there's a very small tolerance there where consumers are willing to accept differences. And so like, if you're selling $1 billion worth of Cheez-Its a year, which is what they're growing year over year, you better have the science nailed down. And cheese, like our biggest learning with Cheddies is that cheese is a living and breathing ingredient, the cows are eating differently throughout the years. The fat content of the cheese is different throughout the year. Moisture level can be different. Like, and when you're multiplying one ingredient to, 1,000 pounds at that scale, it's like any small little change can make a pretty big impact on a manufacturing line. So like, I will say like all the bigger players, they do use real cheese. They use like enough of it to say they have it in there, like on the ingredient labeling. Mm-hmm. But they don't use enough of it to the point where like, they have to use artificial flavorings. They use a lot of like oils in there. We don't use any oil. Like all the oil we use is coming from the cheese, fat. And like they use, I can't speak to like all the bigger players necessarily, but like I've spoken to brokers where they've told me like, they use this cheddar cheese that, and we had used it in the past because we had another option. This was prior to regenerative, but that it's basically like it's heated and then cooled again to basically eliminate, the need to age the cheese to like 8 months. So it's like an accelerated aging process where you're treating it with like, you know, heat and like natural enzymes, but it's just not natural. You know, like we just you just let it sit in the cellar and age it, you know, like, so I can see why.
It kind of harkens back to, we had Daniela Jensen with Big Picture Foods on, and she talked about the accelerated curing process for 99% of olives that are sold in grocery stores. And it sounds like Big CPG is doing a very similar thing for cheese, to quote, you know, accelerate the aging process of cheese. And again, Chetty's not taking any shortcuts, using real cheese that's actually aged. And it sounds like, I have yet to try a box of Chetty's. Shame on me. Primarily because I can't find them nearby. They're not sold at my local stores in Bend. So I got to fix that.
We'll change that. We'll send you a box for sure.
Count me in, man. Like, Jesus, we're growing up. Like, they're like, get your own box slogan or whatever it was. Like, that was me. Yeah. I was like, crushed loads of cheeses.
Oh,
like,
Tomas and I did as well. I mean, we were a big white cheddar family. Reduce fat, you know, because of course we're on a diet. Yeah.
Of course, it was the 90s.
That's going to totally help. Like, you crush a box of 12 ounces of Cheez-Its, it's reduced fat. It's better.
Hey, it worked at the time. But one of the points I wanted to make was that I feel, and I have hope for, the way as a society in the United States, we're trending with food. You know, I think that the era of commercialized, you know, chain food is starting to go away. You know, like when I used to work at P.F. Chang's back in like the, you know, 2007, 2010 era, right? And that's when like Cheesecake Factory, Starbucks, like the big chains were dominating the world. And since then, I feel like the smaller, like, craft coffee shops are starting to pick up steam. People are more interested in local, like, individually owned restaurants with, like, chefs. It's not about, like, that uniformity anymore.
Yeah.
People are starting to become more tolerant of variance and understanding where their food is coming from. And hopefully that can be reflected not just in the restaurants and the coffee shops of the world, but start to, like, make its way into the grocery store as well, so that brands like Chetty's and others can be okay with like some level of variance in their flavor over time because they're using these real ingredients.
You have to be flexible. I mean, if not, then you just try to become like the giants, you know, just
right.
I mean, there's going to be variances for sure.
Yeah.
I think we've seen that in juice. You know, they talk about separation is natural with real juice, and then this started to pick up steam. So, you know, it's again, I think that we're trending in the right direction.
Totally. Yeah.
For those that don't know, Francisco said the name Tomas a couple of times. That's Francisco's brother, who he started the company with and built the company with.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take you into a kind of a double part question, Francisco. Is one, I come from a family business. I know how that usually goes. Talk to us about building
about
this thing, you know, with your brother and your family. And then we ask most of the emerging brands, you know, how have you fundraised and how have you funded this thing? So talk about building a business with your family and the fundraising that you guys have done today.
Yeah. And I cannot tell you the amount of times I've told people that like I'm in business with my brother and my family. And the number one reaction that I get from everybody is like, oh my God, I could never like be in a business with my like brother or sister or whatever. Like that sounds so hard. Like, and like, it is like, that's it. Like it's not any different for Tomas and I by any means. Like we have a really great relationship and we have a really great relationship as a family, but I mean, it's still super challenging, you know, like and over the years, like we hit a few, like critical moments as a family where we all literally just like, we were in the living room just having a discussion and it was basically like, we need to find ways to like become more of a family again. Like all we ever talk about is Chetty's. Like is Chetty's this, Chetty's that, this is wrong, this is wrong. And then we celebrate and the good times are, you know, not very often. Like there's more bad times than good times for the most part. And you know, you do have to have a strong relationship, but I mean, it's work. Like it's, but the upside is that like, you know, I know Tomas has my back like every single day. And also like for us since day one, like there was never a day where we both thought we would quit on this thing. Like when the bad got bad, like it was really bad. Like it was bad, really bad. And we've had some really, really bad times. And like, we've just like, you know, we have each other's backs and we would tell each other like, there's no out. Like it's Chetty's is everywhere. And we like, that's our main mission. Like we want everyone to try Chetty's. We want them to know that it exists. Mm-hmm. That's like our biggest mission. And so like, there's only one way to do that. And that's just to keep on moving forward. So like, it has, it's definitely its pros and its cons, more pros at the end of the day, in my opinion. Like it's, we're closer for it.
I can totally relate to all that. Work with my brother at the family biz and my dad a little bit, and I would do it all over again. And I still work on stuff with them all the time, but it does present those challenges that you just said. And it really is a boundary thing, right? You just have to create some boundaries around our entire life and relationship can't be about this business that we operate together, but it's, totally. It's very hard. It's very hard.
Super hard. Yeah. It's, it becomes difficult to enjoy like personal stuff. Cause it's somehow Chetty's always creeps back into the conversation. So
yeah.
Totally relate. And then the other question you was, how are we funded? So the early days of Chetty's was family and friends. We did that for about a year and a half, enough to where we thought, I think it's the right time to go out and raise capital. This was prior to the pandemic. We raised $330,000 from a VC out of Mexico City. That was like securing our first check for VC was, man, I don't know what's been more difficult. Like, the manufacturing side of Chetty's, like getting it to scale and like, you know, marketing that product or the fundraising part. Yeah. Like everyone talks about it like all the time,
but yeah,
it's so true. Like it's, I mean, but we did, we secured our first check. We had to go to Mexico City for it. we had to form, a new entity in Mexico to receive money from there. And then we had to transfer money from Mexico to pay for bills in the US. Like, and this is like all these loopholes that we're having to jump through. It's so complicated. And like one of the LPs of that fund is the government of Mexico. And so we're just like, so we just received money from the government of Mexico. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, it's just so crazy. And then the pandemic hit, and then, you know, it was just super tough. So we went out and we, got a couple other investors that were interested. And then we needed to look for, they were interested in the regenerative. That was the biggest, that was the biggest change for us, you know, cause we could say that we are the first cheese snack in the country that's regenerative.
Yeah.
At least the cheese is. And, you know, like investors love to hear first, only, you know.
Yes, they do.
You know, they want to know that there's just nothing else out there on the market like yours. Because that's the toughest part is from an investor. And I totally get it. It's like, okay, there is 50 other crackers that are wanting investment. Like what makes yours different? Because a lot of them taste great too. Well, this is how like we're going to go out and sell the product. We're the first in the market that has this, and we believe that consumers are going to be looking for it. Maybe not as much today, but in a couple of years. Okay, yep. I like that game plan. And so, like that took years to understand how investors, you know, mitigate their risks. So that was a big change. And so we secured a partnership with a fund out of Austin called Redbud Brands. It's a really cool. New take on venture capital where they have a team that helps you scale your business. It's a group of experts and a bunch of different areas of expertise, everything from finance to operations. And so it's a joint venture, and we, you know, they help us run the business, help us hire people, and they are helping fund and fundraise. So, like this partnership has been fantastic because Tomas and I now have the ability to go out and help sell and grow the business versus being heads down.
Yeah.
Running.
Do the things you actually want to do and work on the business. Right.
Totally.
We've heard great things about Redbud. Brian, what's Brian's last name?
Goldberg.
Yeah, Brian Goldberg is kind of the leader over there. He's the gentleman that sold Amplify snacks or Amplify brands to Hershey's for what was it, or Francisco? I can't remember.
Don't quote billions. Me, it was like 1.4 or something like that. Yeah. It's impressive. So,
very strong, very seasoned CPG group over there. Awesome that y'all have that support. And, you know, we talk about fundraising on this show all the time. We talk about there needs to be new funders and there needs to be new mechanisms of funding. And so that new take on VC, where really it's kind of their model seems more like an incubator than a true venture capital fund, where they're really getting their hands dirty with y'all. I mean, because I think a lot of investors talk about their value add and the connections they have in the space and the things they can help you with. But like, it's a lot more lip service than action from what I see. But these people have a team and they're rolling their sleeves up and you know, getting their boots dirty with you guys. So that's great to see.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. It's been really fun. I mean, now, you know, kind of merging the Chetty's team with the Redbud team, there's so many different dynamics there that, like, you know, every day is a learning lesson, you know. Just learning to work with someone new is always a challenge. But you know, every day is a really cool experience. And we're all in it for the same reasons at this point. You know, we want to see Chetty's grow. We want to see Chetty's continue to spread the message about regenerative agriculture. So, you know, we align and they align on that as well. They're big believers in regenerative and having more products be, you know, cognizant of their footprint that they're leaving. So, that's what makes everything easy, right? Like when you're on the same page about the mission. So,
love that.
Yeah. So we're rolling. Yeah. Some exciting new things. Our biggest partnership right now is American Airlines. That's been, just incredible for us and, excited to just hopefully continue through that line of distribution.
Is that first class only, or do the peasants where I get to sit in economy? Do we try Chetty's there or no?
You and I both, man. I mean, I can't tell you the times I've been just like, you know, sardined back there, like seeing them pass out Chetty's. And I'm like, hey, what do you think? I will say I did get upgraded one time, racked up those points. And I sat, I was like asleep at first, like I totally passed out. And like, I wake up to just someone like shaking my shoulder. And I was like, what? Like, what? And I look over and like, there's like a snack basket in my face. And I was like, holy shit, I totally forgot that we could be on this flight. And I look and there's like bags of Chetty's and like all this other stuff. And the lady next to me, she grabbed a bag of Chetty's and then like three other people did as well. So I was just there like, you know, gauging everyone's expression. And it was a super cool experience.
Did you tell everybody, like, hey, what do you think of those crackers? You know,
I told the lady next to me, she was a sweetheart. She told me she was 93 years old. She visits her brother every other month in New York. And we ended up, I made the mistake of engaging with her at the beginning of the flight because we ended up. No regrets. It was like a 2.5 hour flight. We spoke for 2 hours, quite literally. And
hey, like it turned into a great piece of LinkedIn content for you though.
It did. It was so funny. Her earring aid kept them like getting all crazy and and she'd like take it out and like, can you say that again? So I was like this close talking to her the whole flight. And
that's awesome.
She ended up taking me. She had a chauffeur and she offered to take me back to my hotel. She was a baller. Wow. Yeah. So
good for
super
her.
Cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to circle back to, like, I think it was the very first question I asked because I don't even think we got there. I want to talk about the future and what's coming next for Chetty's. But before we get there, how many SKUs do you have and what are the flavors?
So right now we have 6 SKUs. We have spicy cheddar, classic sea salt, which is so all the crackers are the same base. And then we add a seasoning on it. But it's classic sea salt, spicy cheddar, and white cheddar. So that comes in the 4.2 ounce boxes. And then we have those three same flavors available in a little 0.8 ounce. So
gotcha.
Those have been going into, like, we got into Google headquarters, we're not allowed to disclose the name, but like a big tech transportation company.
Close.
I could guess. But I think you can connect the dots, you know? That's okay, but you can't say the name. No, everyone's great partners. We really enjoy working with everyone, and the single serves have been awesome. We're in the works of a jalapeno ranch.
Ooh.
That's gonna be good.
Turn me up.
Jalapeno ranch. You know, a little zesty, a little spicy, a little tangy. Okay. A little crispy. And and then as far as the other products, like we're still like, you know, we're really focused on the crackers because that's, you know, that's our bread and butter. And but I think the sky's the limit now that we have, you know, we make our own cheese. We want to do other cheese snacks with that. So that, I think, you know, in good time, that'll come.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you mentioned before you've eaten a ton of cheddar cheese. So I immediately started thinking, okay, like, are Parmies coming next, or maybe Gorgies or some other cheese, you know? I don't know.
Maybe Cheddables. I don't know.
Oh, hey,
tea infused. You know, who wouldn't for that to be, you know, nationwide approved first? But yeah, it's
okay.
We do a lot of R&D here at home, so no, just joking. and that's another thing. Tomas and I love to cook. Like, we'll entertain, and we like to have a good time. Like, that's our culture of Chinese. Like, we just want to have a good time. Like, that's, you mm-hmm. know. That's the most important thing to us. So
for sure. Yeah. Well, that vibe is carried on to this podcast. Again, don't know if it's going to be giving the final credit on, but we spent the first 5 minutes literally laughing. So
I don't know what we were laughing about at one point. We were just laughing.
It honestly reminded me of being like a kid at the dinner table where you get the giggles and your parents are like, stop laughing. And you just can't. And you're just like, there's nothing I can do about this right now. I don't even know what's funny anymore.
I don't know.
We're going.
I've been told I have very expressive eyebrows. So like, I think those things were just kind of going off, you know, like little radars.
That's a great plug for people to consume the content on YouTube right there.
I hope more people listen to this podcast, because what you guys are doing is really awesome. I really think that this is what the industry needs, is more people talking and shedding light on like the few businesses out there that believe that this is the future for food, and like that it is sustainable. It's a very doable thing. We just need to believe in it and continue to spread the word. So thank you guys for doing that.
Yeah, we get the easy job. We just get to showcase the hard work that everybody else like you is doing, you know. So we do the hard work. Anthony really does the hard work for the podcast. So again, shout out to Anthony for all the energy he puts in. I just get to show up with coiffed hair and talk to people.
Hey, you know what? I'm getting a little receding hairline, so you appreciate the hair.
You're totally fine. You're totally fine. And we really do appreciate you saying that. Seriously, that means a lot to us, and that's the whole reason why we do this. So you're teeing us up perfectly to close this thing out with our final question, which is, how do we scale Regen Brands to have 50% market share by 2050? How do we get that done?
I should have seen that question coming. Should have been a little more prepared. No, I think, how do we do it? I think we just continue to place emphasis on, you know, shedding light on the quality of the food and just how important that is, you know, for us as consumers. I think, you know, and Tomas and I talk about this actually pretty regularly, but I think it's become a more of a provocative question to answer today, only because we are far more removed from the food we eat than we ever have been before. You know, like when people were still growing their food, or when they were bartering with their neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, the importance of the quality was number one, you know, because if you saw your neighbor growing their tomatoes with, I don't even know what a bad example would be, but like, call it just dumping chemicals right over the top of their over their produce,
spraying glyphosate once a week on top of there. You know,
let's just we'll take it there, right? Like, but if we were seeing it, if we were, you know, like directly impacted by that, then and that was true for everything that we're eating, then I think as a community, we would say like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, you know, we're damaging the soil. We're damaging the environment. We're eating shit really at the end of the day. Like we need to do something about it, but because like we don't see any of it and we're told that either this is good or this is bad, then we're really at the mercy of just marketing and like media and what news wants us to believe about what's good or bad versus just us as humans making that decision for ourselves, which I believe is just like, it's human nature to see like, okay, this is good and this is bad. Right. Yeah. Like, so I think 2050, how do we do it? I think we need to continue to, we educate people about why this is just how you would grow your food this way. This is how we used to do it. This is how you would do it if you had a choice. And like, that's really what it needs to come down to. I don't know how that messaging comes across in modern day, but you know,
it's real simple, brother. Great tasting food with transparent supply chains. That's exactly what you just said.
Yeah. Transparency was the number one takeaway I had. Yeah. And I was, I'm just going to flip the script again. We actually want to eat shit. We want to use shit as fertilizer to increase the organic soil composition of our soils, to have more nutrient-dense foods. You know, it's like we'd rather eat that than the spread on chemicals. So just, as I said that, and we're talking about regenerative, I was like, that's actually like a flip of the script we should probably acknowledge.
It is. And it is. I mean, see, that's one of those things where like, I don't know if it makes it on the back of the box today. you know, right? Like, we spread shit on our farmlands to, you know, avoid using harsh pesticides and chemicals. I think most consumers nowadays would be like, ew, you know, I don't want my cheese crackers being close to that. But like, you're totally right. Like, I mean, if like somebody was there watching how like, you know, the animals were being raised, it'd be like, dude, just like grab the manure, spread it out, and like don't fuck around with the soil, you know, like whatever they're doing over there, it just looks totally wrong, you know, like chimney stacks and like, you know, cows that are you know, just left in a mud pit, you know, like you would immediately know, like, I don't want to eat that. Right? Like, but we don't see that anymore. So it's like, we'll leave the shit off of the box for now.
For now. There's a reason I'm not in charge of branding. I'm a sales guy because I would suck at branding. It'd be way too extreme.
Rainbows and butterflies definitely sells a little easier. you know, utopic sort of picture of what regenerative is. But I think, I mean, we're just excited to be a part of it, you know, and just an ongoing challenge. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, hey man, we really appreciate having you on. Yeah. Super fun conversation. Sure. Plenty of gigs in there. Love that. And yeah, really love the work that you're doing at Chetty's. Real quick, just so our listeners who might want to order online, is it you go to Amazon? Is it Chetty's.com? How can people find your product?
We're going to be, so actually, like, interestingly enough, we never really like touch base on this, but like a strategic business decision of ours was actually not going into D2C right away. So like, we've actually really refrained from going down that path. We've really focused on retail predominantly. So like, it really sucks when someone's like, oh, where can I buy them? Amazon kind of like makes that easy for your business, but at the same time, it presents a lot of other complications that can deter your business from growth. Mostly because like if you don't have the right team in place, you're putting a lot of energy into keeping that going, and the returns are not good nowadays. They can be good. They're challenging. So we, for many years, just focused on retail, and so now finally this year we're deciding that it's the appropriate time to start selling online. So next month, where I'm going with this, we'll be available on Amazon. So first week of March.
Nice.
Yep.
Perfect timing, man. Perfect timing. We will send people that way.
Perfect timing. Yeah, no kidding. And huge shout out to Alexander Family Farms, Rumiano Cheese, and just, you know, all the supporters out there that have tried Chetty's, our loyal customers, and to those of you that are going to go out and do my little Cheese It Chetty's comparison, I highly encourage it.
Love it. Cool, man. Thank you so much for being with us, bro. Really enjoyed
it. Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it as well.
For show notes and more information on our guests and what we discuss on the show, check out our website, regen-brands.com. That is regen-brands.com. You can also check out our YouTube channel, Regen Brands Podcast, for all of our episodes with both video and audio. The best way to support our work is to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to future episodes. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Regen Brands Podcast, brought to you by the Regen Coalition and Outlaw Ventures. We hope you learned something new in this episode and it empowers you to use your voice, your time, and your dollars to help us build a better and more regenerative food system. Love you guys.